You have questions about Connecticut personal injury law? Then you've found your podcast. Connecticut personal injury attorney Ryan McKean keeps it real. Straight talk, live from Glastonbury, Connecticut. This is Ryan McKean.
Hi, it's Connecticut personal injury attorney Ryan McKean, and today I'm here with Rebecca Toner to talk about EMDR. Good day, Rebecca.
Hello. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Rebecca, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I have been an EMDR therapist in private practice since around 2015, 2016-ish. I'm practicing in Connecticut. I'm licensed right now because of COVID in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine. I think that's it. And I am providing virtual EMDR therapy. I specifically focus in recent traumatic events, as well as people who have had maybe medical trauma or a car accident, or as well as complex severe trauma from childhood all the way through adulthood. And folks who dissociate, which is basically just checking out because their trauma has been triggered, they've hit a threshold, and their mind just kind of goes somewhere else.
And Rebecca, how did you become an EMDR therapist? What kind of school did you go to, and how does one become an EMDR therapist?
Sure. So I attended a master's in counseling program at the Massachusetts School of Professional Psychology, which is now William James College. It's up in Massachusetts. I think it's in Newton now. So it's the Boston area, which all around Boston, there's a lot of talk about trauma therapy, different kinds of trauma, racial, cultural, that's always been part of the conversation up there. So it was definitely discussed, but EMDR therapy never was. And it wasn't until I started attending continuing education credits after I got my license and hearing a little bit more about how therapy can work on a private practice basis, I realized just how deep the need was. People kept discussing EMDR therapy, and I got trained in it, fell in love with it. Once I got the training done, it was like my brain only thought in EMDR from there on out. It just made so much sense. And so I just kept attending training after training after training, and the rest is history.
So what is EMDR?
Sure. EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And that is a big fancy way of saying, if you have a trauma memory, often there is an image of that memory. And when the person who's experienced this trauma thinks back to when that occurred, usually there's some dysregulation that happens. So we rate that dysregulation 0 to 10. How much does that bother you? What's the associated emotion? Where are you feeling in that, in your body? Like, where are you holding that? And from there, we try to find a negative belief about the self that's attached. So the example I always use is I've had a client who was in a severe car accident. And for her, the worst part of it was this image of this car coming, and there was nowhere to go. So the negative belief about the self was, I'm not safe. I'm not in control. I'm going to die. And so it doesn't always have to be a rational belief, but it's very much tied to that memory. You're probably not even aware of it when it's happening, but when we look back on it, it feels very real. And so there's this dual awareness of I'm remembering and feeling like I'm reliving this memory, but I'm also aware I'm safe. It's not happening anymore. I'm in the therapist's office. And then the therapist uses some sort of thing. We call it a dual attention stimulus. It's different mechanisms that get both sides of the brain going and basically talking to each other. The previous thought was that it had to be eye movements side to side. And it was mimicking the eye movements that are done during REM sleep, which is when you're dreaming. And now the focus of the research seems to be leaning a little bit more towards the actual mechanism is just getting both sides of the brain going in some way So for some people, it's auditory. For some people, it's more of a tactile thing. They have to touch it or tossing a ball back and forth in front of their face or walking. And what that does is it stimulates, it floods the emotion. It floods the body. It floods the memory for a very short amount of time. And then it changes where that memory is stored from the autonomic nervous system back over into where memories are supposed to go. So that the next time a smell or a sound or something happens that reminds the person of the trauma, they're not getting completely tripped up and going into fight or flight mode anymore.
So if somebody is in a car accident, mm-hmm. how might they know that EMDR could be an avenue for relief for them or a therapy that might help them? What are the common sort of things that you see in your practice?
So by the time people get to me, they've usually tried everything and they've found no relief. So these are people who all of a sudden, maybe they're absolutely terrified to leave the house, or they're hyper-focused on their children and ensuring safety in any possible way, whereas previously they might have been a little bit more lackadaisical and letting their kids learn by taking more risk, if they're like toddlers or something. I've had other people who every time they think about getting in a car, they have a severe panic attack. Their palms get sweaty, their heart rate increases, they can't breathe, they feel sick to their stomachs, headaches. Other people just, you know, if it's some sort of like a physical or sexual trauma, being anywhere near anybody can feel very overwhelming in that way too. And it feels like being almost like ported back over into the memory and actively reliving it and feeling like your brain gets kind of hijacked.
So, and when should somebody contact an EMDR therapist like you? Mm-hmm. Like, should they go through other kinds of treatments? Do they need a referral from their primary care doctor? How does that work?
They can usually self-refer to therapists most of the time. The only thing with that is that some insurances actually do require a referral from a physician beforehand. So I recommend knowing benefits of insurance first. That's step one. And often actually insurance can be extremely helpful because sometimes they have case managers or lists of EMDR therapists specifically who are accepting new clients who are in network. So that kind of takes out some of the legwork. So also people can look up, I prefer Therapy Den. It's a wonderful, just therapyden.com. It's a great listing basically, where you can see kind of like a living profile of therapists and how they talk about their clients and themselves and their experiences, and how basically you get a really good sense of how they work, because it's a little bit more of an involved profile than some of the other sites. And you can reach out directly from that site to that therapist and they can respond right away. So it makes it a little easier to access care.
And if somebody, one of the things that people often face when they're in accidents, or for us, when they suffer injuries, whether they're workplace injuries or mm-hmm. medical negligence, they get overwhelmed with the, like, an amount of appointments. They may have to be going to physical therapy, and look, they still got their job, and, you know, really their life gets thrown into a lot of disarray, given all the hats that people wear in today's really busy world. Mm-hmm. Now, how, you know, is somebody going to have to go to EMDR 3 times a week for months on end, or how does that typically work in terms of duration of treatment?
Sure. So it kind of varies person to person, but with EMDR therapy specifically, it's really cool because I've had clients who they already have a therapist that they really like, and then a trauma happens to them. Their therapist is not EMDR trained, but they also don't want to give up that relationship. So they come to me and I just focus on the trauma with them. We just do EMDR. I've had people in and out in 2 sessions. Obviously that's a very specific case with a very specific trauma. It's perfectly doable because they already have that outside support. So we can kind of skip through a lot of the rapport building stuff and just focus and go for it. Other people I have had for a long time, because they choose it to be that way. They need it to be a little bit more of them driving the bus. So that's the really cool thing about EMDR is you could also do talk therapy with it. You know, sometimes for a single event trauma, it could be a few sessions, like 5-10 sessions. And I've also, for the more complex cases or people who just feel like they have a lot more stuff to work through, the practice that I work for is Beehive Counseling and Wellness. And there's a couple of us there who provide EMDR intensives where we take a half day, a whole day, 3 to 5 days. Insurance doesn't cover it, but things like victim services might, or, you know, letters of protection might, where we just sit down. That's the only client we see for that chunk of time. And we just power through as much of the traumatic material as possible. And honestly, it's probably a little bit more realistic and sustainable than most people might think, because they could just sit down, dedicate a whole week to it, treat it like a retreat, arrange childcare for their kids so they're not getting overwhelmed, they're not going to be interrupted. And we just power through everything we possibly can, start to finish, and then they're good.
And how long does a typical EMDR session last? Is it hours? Is it a half day? How long if somebody's looking to have EMDR services, how long does it typically last for a session?
Sure. So the current model that is the most widespread is definitely the medical model. And so a lot of that just over the years has been dictated by insurance, where they won't reimburse for more than a clinical hour. So if it's the hourly model, it tends to be once a week. And it's really like that 53 minutes is the sweet spot. When we're trained in EMDR, like the basic training to get started as an EMDR therapist, they actually dictate that it should be 90 minutes. So we're already kind of taking a hit there, and that can sometimes be what elongates the whole process. But the really cool thing about things like EMDR intensives is now we could just square off 3 hours, 6 hours, 5 days, and just push. And because insurance doesn't cover it, it's hard sometimes for people to access that, but the benefit would be that they are in less treatment over time if they have to go to physical therapy 3 times a week or something like that.
Now, some people may not be familiar with EMDR, but, you know, we had talked sort of before this interview about, you know, some, like the military uses EMDR and other organizations. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of the widespread use of EMDR for somebody who may, you know, they may be hearing about it for the first time on this video?
Sure. The initial studies by Francine Shapiro, who created EMDR, were really around the military. So folks with combat trauma, pretty severe combat trauma. And I think the main reason for that is just because there's a lot of experimental treatments being done in general with military folks and places like VFWs and military hospitals where people would go for shell shock treatment. There's just large groups of them right there, pretty easy to access. So that's really how it got its start. And that's where I think actually a lot of the research has kind of maintained its focus. But from there, it's been expanded to be able to help people quit smoking, any type of substance use and related trauma and loss. There's ways to do EMDR and sand tray therapy or plague therapy with small children. There are ways to do EMDR therapy with like somatic treatment. So where trauma or memories or negative beliefs about the self might be held in the body somewhere based on intergenerational trauma that's been handed down. So it's expanding into pretty much any area of treatment you could think of. EMDR could be beneficial depending on the person. It's not for every single person, but there's probably a protocol to treat most populations at this point with most issues.
That's really interesting. I didn't realize that it had expanded so much. I certainly knew of its use in the military, but that makes a lot of a lot of sense given it's a, you know, really the ability to help people. I know you had mentioned, you know, about stimulating both sides of the brain, mm-hmm. Whether it be through eye movement or auditory or, you know, touch, sensory, you know, if somebody's nervous about coming to EMDR, like mm-hmm. what is sort of a typical session? I mean, are they going to come in and are you going to have them, you know, putting their hands in sand, or how does that work? And I understand every mm-hmm. case, every person may be different.
Sure. And you know, it's funny because it's actually evolved again because of COVID-19. So initially how I used to do it, this was based on my preference, was I don't love the idea of sitting and doing the actual back and forth eye movements with my hand, because the way we're coached to do that is sitting almost touching knees with the person and very, very close to their face doing this sort of eye movement. A, that's not sustainable, like 10 hours a day as the clinician. It hurts. I actually know someone who's in physical therapy because of what she did to herself with her shoulder. And then also it's pretty invasive for clients, especially if they have any type of physical trauma or medical trauma, and just having people on them and a stranger, they don't like it. So there are a few different apparatus to use. And one of them, I don't have it with me cause it's at the office. But it looks like a little remote control. And on that remote control, there's two little dials and there's some ports. And so the dials control the speed and the intensity of the stimulation. And the two little ports, there's one where you can plug in some headphones. So you get the auditory and it's just beeping back and forth, almost like those hearing tests when we were kids, like, you know, at the nurse's office. And then the other one has this attachment where there are these two little round things that you hold in each hand, or you could put one under each leg, or you could just sit there and watch them because they have lights on top of them and they buzz alternately. They vibrate in your hands and they can go back and forth depending on how fast you need it to go. So that's probably one of the most common ways that people do it. And that really, at that point, you just kind of focus on the image and let the machine do its work. So you don't have to focus on moving your own eyes. There's also, I've seen this thing, it's called a light bar, and it's basically like a big straight bar and it's got a light that goes back and forth. And it's kind of the same idea. I think there's actually an episode of like In Treatment or Private Practice or one of those shows that actually features it. And then there's what I prefer now is really interesting. And it's because of COVID-19, self-tapping. And so clients, and this is actually something that anyone could do if they're having an anxiety attack. So this is really cool information. Especially if you have someone who's activated like at court or something, you just sit and you can cross your arms over your chest and kind of touch shoulders or touch alternate arms, or you could just tap on opposite knees alternately. And just repeat, I'm safe, I'm calm, it's okay. I'm safe, I'm calm, it's okay. And that's something that I pair with a personal image of some sort to kind of get people used to the idea of doing EMDR in one of our first sessions so that they're a little bit more ready to go when we actually jump into reprocessing trauma.
Wow, that is profoundly useful. And thank you for sharing that. I know even my son has, my son does that. He has a thing called mirror to help calm him, and he will do the tapping. But I never thought about that for adults. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a, if people got nothing else from this, that is such a practical thing for people. Oftentimes I know when we deal with injuries, we deal with, you know, one of the things with injuries that is pretty consistent is, you know, the sooner people get treatment, the better off that they are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if their back hurts and they start getting physical therapy, mm-hmm. They have better outcomes. And if they wait, and then arthritis can set in and joints can go bad. Is that true with EMDR? Are they better off getting it earlier? Should they wait for 6 months, or is there any sort of, or does it not matter?
I'd like to say it pretty much doesn't matter. Because I know obviously sometimes there's really barriers to that. And I don't want people to think that if they can't access treatment right away, they can't at all. Totally not true. So there's actually a recent traumatic events protocol for EMDR where you essentially go through, almost like a flip book or like frame by frame of a traumatic event and maybe an associated injury. And you keep reprocessing from the beginning of when it becomes the most activated, like what frame is the worst part for them. You reprocess that, you go back to the beginning. It's studied that that's supposed to be between 2 weeks and 6 months out from the event. So that's like the ideal time. I've had clients use that same protocol years later and they've done wonderfully with it, just like they probably would have if it was 2 days later. So that part doesn't really matter. The part that might matter is, do they have additional trauma on top of that or traumatic things that continue happening as a result of what happened, where that might start compounding the trauma. And also something to consider might be if it's like they're living in a domestic violence situation, you probably don't want to unlock that and flood that person until the threat is actually gone, because they should be responding to an active threat with fight or flight syndrome. So that is probably the only real consideration for timing wise. But other than that, I mean, I've had people, they've had something happen when they were like 20 years old, right? And they were fine, thought they were fine with it. They have a similar thing happen when they're in their 30s or 40s. And all of a sudden that thing from when they were 20 feels like the bigger deal. So it's just the way the brain kind of does its thing. And this is one way to hack that.
You had just touched on a little bit about somebody, you know, in a domestic violence situation. Are there people who, you know, should not be considering EMD? Or who would not be good candidates? I mean, I think anybody listening to this should talk to an EMDR therapist if they're thinking about it. But I find it interesting that you mentioned, you know, somebody in those kinds of situations.
Yeah. So this is personal preference for me, just because of where I specialize and a little bit of my experience. I don't love the idea of doing EMDR therapy with someone who has like a chronic thought disorder, like a chronic mental illness where there might be some paranoia or psychosis. There are EMDR therapists who work with that. There's just not a whole lot of information about how effective it could actually be. And sometimes it just really might activate something and you open a whole can of worms that you don't really want to. So I don't tend to recommend it for those folks just based on my own self. Other therapists would say differently. The other thing that I would really consider is anyone who's still actively living in a trauma or in some sort of a traumatic situation. So if a person has a workman's comp issue and they still have to go work at that place, that might be a consideration if they're really getting flooded every time they have to go talk to their boss or whatever. And also I really, for folks who have active substance addiction, there are EMDR therapists who do work with that. It's just the type of EMDR therapy that I do specifically really tends to open up a lot of old wounds, and that could really put someone at risk for overdosing and relapse and ruining their lives and abusing children and all that stuff. So we go through a very, very good assessment process for the first three phases of the 8-phase model of EMDR. And sometimes we don't do EMDR with people, or sometimes they're not ready. They don't consent to it. And that's okay. That's their right. And we just switch gears.
You had mentioned that you specialize in EMDR. Mm-hmm. And so somebody who may be listening to this, they may say, I have my own therapist. Can mm-hmm. my therapist just do EMDR? Mm-hmm. So I guess, what does it take to become a specialist in this area? And how do you know somebody is a specialist? Mm-hmm. And can you just, shed some light on that?
Totally. So they would need to have at least their basic training complete. So there's different tiers basically of EMDR therapy training. So you have the first tier, which is just basic training. They've completed the bare minimum and they know how to start using the EMDR very basic protocol. Typically, those folks have not had additional training beyond that. It might be a goal for them. And they may want to be seeking specific EMDR trainings in a specialized area, let's say like perinatal mental health or working with children doing sand tray therapy or something. So then once they finish that piece and they satisfy all the requirements for that, then they can continue seeking EMDR consultation with an approved consultant through EMDRIA, the EMDR International Association. And that person really guides them one-on-one or with groups through how to continue using and developing their specific EMDR skill set. From there, they can become certified. So that takes, I think it's 20 additional hours of consultation with an EMDR consultant, plus specialized additional continuing education trainings through EMDRIA. And you have to see a certain amount of clients and have done a certain amount of EMDR sessions to be able to satisfy that requirement. And then once they do that, they can continue getting consultation and training and become an EMDR consultant and then move on to provide trainings.
Wow.
There's a lot.
There's a lot. And that's really, I think it's really helpful to know for people who are going through this, mm-hmm. because they may think that they may have a therapist that they like, and they may think maybe my therapist can do it, but they would mm-hmm. probably be, well, they really need to be seeking somebody with very specialized training yeah. in exactly this, which really just, still, this has been really, I've learned so much and I'm appreciative of your time. Just a few questions. Is there anything that, you know, we haven't covered that you think that somebody who's, you know, suffered some sort of injury should know about EMDR that we haven't talked about?
Sure. I will say it's really intense, but the intensity is shorter. And the level of intensity is probably not any worse than someone might be feeling right before a panic attack. So if it's someone who's frequently getting triggered throughout the day or throughout the week anyway, you're already going through that intensity. You can absolutely handle EMDR. And you have a therapist to walk you through it. So a good EMDR therapist will help you set up good self-care outside of sessions and really help you track your symptoms and anything that shifts or new insights in between sessions too. And I also really recommend, if you're going to do EMDR therapy, especially in intensive, find childcare for afterwards, or don't make plans to go out for drinks after. Keep the energy level kind of low and just take really good care of yourself and have a good idea of what that means. Maybe include your partner in a conversation that you're going through this. This is the goal. And here are some things to expect. Ask the therapist to meet with you and your partner so you can get that set up ahead of time. And if you're someone who lives alone, maybe also reach out to a couple of friends to just kind of like make sure they check in on you, make sure you're okay and you're not going off into, you know, anxiety land by yourself in your house for several weeks while you process this stuff.
And that's all great advice, right? Because it's really, like, we're holistic and it's not just going to be the therapy, it's everything outside of the therapy and the support that's necessary for somebody to going through that. Mm-hmm. Now you had mentioned that you're licensed in, you know, Connecticut and mm-hmm. several other New England states. Does that mean that anybody in those states can Zoom with you?
Yep.
Or how does that work? So if you're in Connecticut, you can treat anybody in Connecticut.
Correct.
Via Zoom, they don't have to travel. They don't have to physically travel to your office.
Right. And that's really been a point of contention with EMDRIA, as well as we've sat with all the changes from COVID-19, because when I was trained initially, we were told never to do virtual EMDR therapy. And I'm here to tell you, it's, I think, even more effective than in person. And so I can work, basically any EMDR therapist can work with anyone located in the state where they are licensed. And a lot of therapists are really starting to get licensed across multiple states. Ideally, we're pushing for legislation across our field, across the different disciplines for just licensure portability. So it works a little bit more like a driver's license to be able to practice pretty much anywhere. And it absolutely can be done virtually. I think depending on the client and depending on their life environment, it can actually be more effective than let's stop life, commute to the office, be in the office, commute back, versus just being in somebody's safe environment that they get to control with like their cat and maybe their favorite blanket or a cup of coffee or the things that they normally keep around themselves just to be happy.
And if they do want to see you in person, you have offices in both Southington and Manchester, right?
Yeah.
Connecticut?
Yep.
So like, and are you even right now during COVID, are you accepting in-person consultations?
So that's the goal. So the Southington office is brand new as of today. I think we're maybe halfway furnished. So we're still working on that part, but it's not a no. And Julie Madsen is the other person who provides intensives. And she, I think, is just about to become an EMDR consultant as well. She does some in-person as well. I'm still currently virtual just because I'm homeless for an office right now until we have furniture. But also as it's getting warm here in New England and it's getting nice outside, outdoor sessions might be a thing too. So, and that could be really cool and get creative in a whole different way.
Well, that is fantastic. And it's so important for, you know, people to have accessibility to any sort of treatment. And the fact that that you're learning and able to do it virtually. I mean, look, we have clients who are paralyzed and, you know, getting anywhere is a tremendous, is a tremendous barrier. So this is just wonderful to hear. And really, if somebody is listening to this, how should they reach you? What's the best way to reach out to you?
So if you're looking for an EMDR consultation or looking to see if EMDR might be a good fit, the best thing to probably do is go to www.beehivecw.com and fill out the contact form there, because I also have a couple of EMDR therapists that I'm training to kind of do what I do as well. And they're accepting new clients as of right now. So even if you can't get in touch with me for whatever reason, there's still several people who can help. And if you just want to have a chat about, if you're representing a client as an attorney, and you're not sure if it might be good for them, absolutely give me a shout. You can reach me at Rebecca@supportivesupervision.com. That's my EMDR and clinical supervision consultation practice.
And I will put links to those across all the platforms that we have. So anybody looking for this can reach out and reach Rebecca. Rebecca, thank you so much. I have learned so much. And I know for anybody who's going through these very serious issues after some sort of injury would absolutely benefit from considering EMDR therapy. And I hope that this has in some ways demystified it for some people. It's just been very informative. I'm going to share this interview with my whole team and to really allow them to understand what is out there and the power of this. So thank you so much.
You've been listening to Connecticut personal injury attorney, Ryan McKean, giving you straight talk and answering your questions about Connecticut personal injury law. It's serious stuff. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find Ryan on Twitter at Ryan McKean, on Facebook at CT Trial Firm, on LinkedIn at Ryan McKean, and on Instagram at CT Injury Lawyer. Till next time.